And so, and that's one of the things that I also wanted to bring up in our conversation too, is as parents, we need to give the grace to our students, our kids to fail. And it's one of the things that, so I asked my daughter before we started, you know, what's something that you like about homeschooling? And she knows, you know, enough about public school from TV shows to amass somewhat knowledge. And she said that she likes not having grades, and she doesn't work well with that understanding. And to me, that's all I've known, you know, it is the grading process. And so I know if I got a B, well, I know 80%, but then there's 20% I didn't know. And so she doesn't realize that she can't get away with that. But in her mind, that's a positive thing because the weight of that grade is off of her and she's able to concentrate more on knowing things. And so she's hard on herself when she doesn't know something, but it's that reinforcement of it's okay to fail because that's where we know to concentrate on and to also pick a different way of knowing. And that should be for us as well as parents is, okay, if homeschooling isn't working for you, let's try a co-op. Let's try a specialization. Let's see if teaching music, if there's a way of, you know, repetition or hearing and practicing, or you know, those ways of introducing new concepts, and see if like you were saying, learning from somebody else is better, and then we can pick what's best. But we're still the primary motivators for that education of being the one that says you are going to this because I'm a good father who's in charge of my family, who's doing what God wants me to by making sure that you get the best education and you're reading to a librarian because they're specialized in one-on-one reading for that hour. So it's okay for them to fail, and it should also be okay for us to fail because it's so much easier for us to pick ourselves back up and go, all right, where did we go wrong? What can we do? And the amount of one of the also good things economically we talked about is that there's so much out there for us to put on.
That's
and so,
right.
And so now it's almost too hard because it's like, well, what curriculum do I pick?
Yeah.
Just know you're probably going to waste some money in what you pick because what worked for one kid might not work for the other. You might want half of one and half of the other. And just go with something and see if that's what you like and see if that's what you want to teach and see if that's the best way for kids to learn. And then you're out $40. So, you know, get the base level and then you can add the modules to it if you want to.
Yeah, absolutely. And ultimately, there is so much out there that is good that if you just know what to look for, so you're looking for a knowledge-rich, fact-rich curriculum. You're looking for phonics in reading. You're looking for, direct decoding math instruction and not discovery math. If you know what you're looking for, and then there are a broad range of curricula that will be positive in that direction. And you don't have to sweat too much if you got the exact best one, because we have such a wealth of these materials now. It's like, this was not always the case. even when you and I were quite young, to find a phonics core reading curriculum would have been a challenge. because the fad was so strongly in the other.
Yeah.
Now it's super easy. And in fact, now most public schools have a phonics trip.
I remember our class was our Catholic school was the last one. And it was always the phonics with the little rhino eraser on top of the books that we had through it all. That's what drove me to phonics, because I learned to read so quickly through that, and my families were big readers. And so if you have a family that desires to read, especially with your kids, especially early, especially it's fun. And, you know, you might have to do Berenstain Bears, which you're like, pick a short book, and then they don't pick a little critter. They pick Berenstain Bears that has a lot of words. Yeah. But, you know, it's you're going to turn it over to them, and they're going to start sounding stuff out.
Right. Right. Yeah. And my kids already, by the way, are getting into the Tuttle Twins series, but not in one sitting.
Yeah.
Those books are too dang long for kids, my kids.
Especially if they watch the show first and then you pick the book.
Which we haven't done, in part because I want to get through the books, so my kids are a little more interested in politics and government and that kind of thing for kids their age than they normally would be, because of what their daddy does for a living, because they know that I do this for a living, and that it's interesting to me, and they like me most days. Right. And so there's a little more, I've got a little more, like, again, it's, I find it one of the worst ideas is to find age level readers and always stick to a leveled reader. Go up and down outside the level based on interest.
Yeah.
Based on interest, because that's the important part. And even if your kid is in a reader that's below their level, if it's something in their interest, then it will help more than a leveled reader that is not in their interest. Mm-hmm. Certainly if you're working in their interest, you can go above their level of reading, and actually their level of knowledge of that subject area, their level of interest of that subject area will carry them a lot further than you think. Mm-hmm. Again, like I said, like, researchers forget that parents and politicians don't know this. It's so well established, but
yeah, it's also why early programs, early development programs fail, because parents then offload that responsibility to teachers and then never reinforce it when they're at home for the other 16 hours that they're there. But I was just going to say, playing Roblox, is you're reading typed words faster. And I don't correct unless if I'm reading it along with her, and if she's just reading it, but she's trying it and she's learning it and she's playing that same game over and over again. So that way next time you realize, oh, she's reading better and she's reading faster and quicker. And it's just interesting putting roadblocks in Roblox and Roblox kind of to get them out of their comfort zone is not something that you find in the 30 person classroom, because there's nothing curtailed to that one person. You might put them in an AP class. You might put them in a advanced level, reader or something like that. But I mean, I think about in my early school years, all the people that were in the advanced classes, except for one, ended up being burnouts for the advanced classes. And so the precursors of today aren't always to point us to where our students will be, but it's giving them the tools to then teach themselves as we get further along. We're talking about young kids or just starting out, but even older kids, you end up having a curriculum that's designed for self-learning. And so this helps to reinforce it. And you might not be able to go there if you're just starting out today and your high schooler has known nothing but public school and is going into it, but the challenges there are going to be the same but different.
Yeah, absolutely. And by the way, it's funny, the way we set up the factory model schooling, you mostly get more branching out in the higher grades, when arguably it's even more valuable in the lower grades.
Yeah.
And policymakers are extremely resistant to that because it sounds like you're saying that some kids are going to be set up for a lifetime of smooth sailing academically and some kids aren't, which is not necessarily correct, but I can see why they, and there's a lot of opposition even to having a college bound, non-college bound, or anything even tracking is considered a big faux pas in the educational community, even in the higher grades now. And so certainly in the lower grades, people would go ballistic, but it doesn't have to be tracking. It's not about, again, quality is not about position on a 100 degree scale. It's about fit for a kid. And that's so much of the losing sight of that education is ultimately about an individual kid. And that yes, we might have 30,000 of these individual kids that we're trying to put through this school division, but education is ultimately about an individual kid learning, and that's where
the permanent record model, I think, trips us up, because we think, oh, I've got a straight A student, they're in the honor roll, they're this, but do they have command of the material? And also, I think, and it's one of the things that I tend to want to emphasize in my school choices, is cross promotion of the material. Can they take the history into the geography? Can they take the geography into the languages? Can they take the math into the history? And build out and up and build upon those things and say, oh, this happened in the year 800 when, you know, Charlemagne was crowned, you know, the main dude. What else was happening around there? And what do we see economically? What else do we see just socially that changed the norms? Or, you know, the roads of Rome helped lead out the gospel. The economics of Rome helped to disseminate the gospel when that's not what they wanted. But then, boom, the temple's destroyed, and they don't have a choice but to deal with this new cult of Judaism that has come out of it. And so seeing those things as an adult, going, oh, I wish I would have known that younger. Well, now I have the ability to inflict those ideas onto my children. Yeah, exactly. And just building upon and seeing it cross promoted and retained. You know, how many of us, it happened to me too. I was more into a math major before I switched, where my simple math was a lot more complex than it is today, where I'm like, all right, 8 times 3 is 16, 24. Okay. Yeah, before it would have been like, oh, I can do a polynomial in my head. And so utilizing that, and then if you get the good cross promotion, you're more apt to use it. You're more likely to read a book on theology and then apply it to history, and then take a fiction book and realize, oh, what from this worldview of this person is this saying about them socially, culturally? What was their background? And putting things in context historically, going, oh, this person's an Asian writer, and they come from, you know, Vietnam. What did Vietnam in the 60s look like? All these things cross promote themselves, and I think that's what we lose when we have teacher A teaching a whole slew of things that they have to then grade, and then go, well, you know, you're a B. Well, a B ranges from 80 to 90. So that means you're missing 20% out. Or you have teachers that teach only one subject and they're just concerned about their subject, which might be good for them and their requirements. But for that student who needs that connection or who doesn't need that connection, depending on who that student is, I think it shows the benefits of, if not homeschooling, but personalizing as much as possible, because that's what you would want too, as a person who wants to learn new things. You don't want to learn everybody else's job at your new job. You want the specifics, and then you want to build out from there and go, oh, if I need a part B, then I go to this department for it and then see how that works into it. So.
But see, that's where you're wrong, Patrick, because now you can get social studies in every subject. The exact social studies they want you to learn will now be every word problem in math, everything you read in language arts, everything, every scientist you learn about will either be diverse in the way their pigment aligned itself or diverse in the way they use their genitals, because now you're getting social studies in every subject. So they have solved this problem for you now, Patrick.
Yes, that's true. That's true. But at some point we have to realize the colonizers won, and to him go the spoils of victory. So.